Welcome back to our CX podcast this week. We got a good episode this week. We have our first guest joining us, Mr. Patrick McClure. Thanks for joining us, Pat.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate you joining us. So just to give a quick rundown of what we're going to do today, we're going to revisit our CX in the news. We've one of our CX leaders has been in the news a couple of times recently, and Paul's going to talk a little bit about that. But today we really want to focus on one of the core competencies that we talked about with customer experience, and that is customer understanding or customer research. So that's where we're going to spend our time today. But before we do that, Paul, you and I and Pat were talking yesterday a little bit about what's been going on out in the world, and Nordstrom's come up a couple of times. Some people might be more familiar with some stories than others, but you know, we thought you kind of brought up Nordstrom, so wanted to see what you've been hearing.
Yeah, so interestingly, Nordstrom's come up a couple of times. First, it was about their return policies. There was a rumor going around that they had given up their long-standing return policy, and so people were questioning what's going on with Nordstrom. And the second thing is that they got rid of or dumped Ivanka Trump's line, and so there was quite a bit of conversation and around that. The first one, it turned out not to be true. Nordstrom spokesman came back and said, no, in fact, we haven't dumped it. But she did such an elegant job of describing the fact that, hey, some customers perhaps abuse that policy. And it's not that they've dumped it, but that they're paying attention. And if they can't serve a good customer, maybe it's time to part ways. I loved it. She did such a great job. Other companies take a very harsh approach and assume that everyone is a criminal and abusing their systems. They're very, very clear that, look, we've got a return policy, but there are sometimes folks that do it. We're watching. We will give people the benefit of the doubt a few times, but if they're abusing it, maybe we're just not the right company for you guys. So fantastic response. The other one was really around Ivanka Trump's giving that lineup. And I think there are a number of companies that have come into, with the new political environment they've got customers, those customers are political, and have had to make some decisions around, where they stand kind of thing. I think there's an interesting aspect to this whole environment, which is who are your target customers and what do they care about? What are you as a company? What's your purpose all about? And are you true to that brand because your brand is reflected out in the number of places? I think it's a difficult environment for many companies, but, and I think there's probably some soul searching. I think the companies who understand who their customers are, and for example, there were many people who said they were going to boycott Nordstrom. Nordstrom really has to make the decision, are those my customers or are they not my customers at the end of the day? And what does my brand stand for? And what is my purpose out in the world? So I think it really, from our last conversation about strategy a couple of weeks ago, it really ties into, are you clear about who and what you are? And then I think it bleeds into today's conversation on research about, look, are you listening to customers? Do you have a pulse on them? When you're listening to customers and have that voice of the customer program, are you listening to the right customers? Do you know, which customers are truly your customers and which ones are just noise out in the marketplace? Because you don't necessarily have to listen to those who are not your customers.
Yeah. Well, that's a great segue into our topic for today. So like we mentioned, so last week we talked about our core CX competencies. And so one of those key ones was customer understanding, or, how do you keep a pulse on and understand who your customers are, what drives them, et cetera. But we want to talk today more introductory, kind of broader, what are some research methods or what do we mean by customer understanding and how do we actually go about that? So, Paul, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, so customer understanding is a foundation. No matter what framework, that customer experience framework you look like, it is a capability that is core, that is foundational to any customer experience program. Oftentimes people think about that customer understanding bucket as the voice of the customer and let's go survey. We all get a ton of surveys these days. That is a very important piece, but there's many, those voice of the customer programs have evolved quite a bit from that, you know, once a year annual type of survey to almost a real-time transactional as well as relationship types of surveys. There are community tools that are out there now that are community tools and panel types of tools that are helping customers or companies do ad hoc research. Mm-hmm. So and ask a survey, but gosh, I may actually want to ask a whole slew of follow-ups after that survey. Do I have a research panel that I can go back out to or a research community that I could ask follow-up questions? There is, ad hoc research could be, you know, let me go out and interview folks or go out into an environment and observe my customers in motion. I may want to go into an online environment. I can observe, you know, lots and lots of customers. There are tools to help me observe customers or even videotape what customers are doing and, mm-hmm. and feeling. Tremendous number of tools out there, but altogether they make up, you know, a mechanism for me to understand what customers are actually experiencing and hopefully make some sense of that and drive that into any kind of agenda for how am I spending money and how what kinds of projects and efforts am I doing to drive continuous improvement or drive leapfrog improvements and innovation from there. Absolutely a business advantage for those companies who build that capability, a huge business advantage over those who don't.
Okay. So Pat, I think, you know, I've heard in terms of the ways in which we go about understanding, there are kind of a couple of, you know, many different methods. Paul kind of listed off a lot of the specifics, but you know, we kind of almost bucket them into qualitative versus quantitative research methods. Do you want to walk us through kind of what we mean when we talk about qualitative versus quantitative?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I kind of want to start with too, I think when you have a research directive or a team of people within your organization that are dedicated to research, if you're a consulting group coming in to do research work, the important part is, and we've found this with a project that Paul and I just ended, you have to have that hypothesis going in. You have to have the project and research directive. People get, you know, kind of nervous about the idea of research because it can become too academic or too high level, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But coming in with that hypothesis piece is a huge part of what we do. And that's how we make our research actionable. And I think that's an important part of making research teams actionable. And I think any research team would agree with that. But something that maybe clients or companies at large don't really think about is if you have a research directive or a specific business metric you're trying to meet, that's when you engage research to kind of find how within the customer base you're going to be able to implement a program to affect that metric, et cetera, and always keeping that in mind while you're going through. Mm-hmm. So it's the difference between qualitative and quantitative research and how we've dealt with it. You know, just to speak to the project that we recently finished, you know, we start, you can engage with a number of different research activities, but what we like to do is start with kind of this behavioral cluster analysis, what we call cluster analysis, which is really that quant piece. And that really is taking a look at transactional, behavioral, or account-based data to understand. So for instance, e-commerce transactional data or website traffic data or just engagement data otherwise, that's going to give us a quantitative view as to who these customers are behaviorally. So that's an example of quantitative data. We start there based in fact, and then we move into more of a qualitative data, discovery phase where we conduct those, you know, customer interviews. But what's great about those customer interviews after kind of engaging in the quantitative research part up front is that we start with the correct customers. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of one fear of qualitative research out there is that, you know, we're just going to go out and talk to customers and then take that as, you know, truth when in reality, maybe you're only doing 15 interviews, et cetera. But if you start with a knowledge of who those customers are, then you move into interviewing the correct people, which is really that that qualitative piece. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of move into another part where we distribute a survey over the customer base of whoever we're talking or whoever we're working with in order to validate some of those, validate or invalidate some of those hypotheses. So, you know, I guess the short of it is, and I realize I'm rambling a little, is that you know, the quant really gives you the how much and how many, and the qual gives you the why and the how, and they're both extremely valuable for how you design a solution. Is if it's an experience or a technology implementation or a new business model, the why and the how from your customer's perspective is equally as important as the how much and how many.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the how much and how many quantitative research activities are extremely important for validating across your customer base how much of an issue maybe something is or how important a strategic initiative might be in the future. So, you know, we try to couch it like that for all of our research activities as it relates to, you know, the solutions that we recommend to our clients.
Yeah. Nice. So I've kind of heard you use this term called the triangle of truth. And for those of of our audience who haven't necessarily heard of it, can you just give us kind of the real high level, what is it and why is it important?
Sure. And Paul, go ahead and step in anytime you would like, because Paul and I both utilize that. Paul might be a little skeptical on some of the triangle of truth naming, but the idea with the triangle of truth, is that, you know, especially as it relates to the current state of the customer experience, there is something going on, right? There is the truth of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That truth lives between three different points. And so we like to say that we're going to triangulate the truth. But really the three different tips of that triangle are as such. One is, you know, what the stakeholders say is happening. So that's one tip. That's their understanding of what is actually going on with the current day customer experience. The other tip is what customers say is going on, which is one understanding of the truth. And then the third tip is what actually is going on.
Yeah.
So what we would observe is going on in today's customer current state. So when we organize and we create our research activities for our clients, we like to talk about that triangle because it will provide context as to our activities and also
mm-hmm.
what we're going to find out with those particular activities and what the next steps are for validating or invalidating some of those things that we find as it relates to the overall project initiative. So, you know, the stakeholders say a tip of the triangle would be more related to running workshops to kind of gain a consensus of what a current state is for a customer. And then obviously the customer say piece would be where we would love, you know, survey activities as
mm-hmm.
well as any of the qualitative or the interview activities that we spoke about just briefly ago. And then the observed part obviously would be us actually going out to sites or being with customers as they go through a current state experience or a process so that we can kind of take further notes to contextualize and to understand better what's going on. And those feed directly into our recommendations. And, you know, obviously the most ideal way to come up with recommendations based on the truth would be to do all three sets of activities.
Sure.
So that's the idea.
I would say, you know, most companies don't have a research capability and so rely just on what internal employees say. That may get you so far, especially if you're using frontline employees who actually have a lot of intersection with customers. But oftentimes those folks aren't invited in either.
Right.
So, you know, because of those constraints, you do that. I also want to make it, you know, point out that what customers say and what they actually do can be quite different. You know, and Ford famously said, hey, you know, if you ask our customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
Right.
So it's important to not only look at what they're saying, but what they're doing. And, you know, I think where Ford and Jobs were really, really great was observing and reading between the lines and understanding what a customer's intent was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we want to, you know, we do some of the observational research is really to get into those types of things.
Awesome.
Yeah, to touch on that, I think, you know, what was, I'm thinking of a past client engagement where we were doing customer interviews. And, you know, we went, basically we were on site before this particular customer went into a class, and we were studying the social aspect of that experience and how much it would affect them coming back in and re-engaging, et cetera. So we just explicitly asked him, we were like, hey, you know, how much does the social aspect affect you coming back in? Is it a big part of your experience? And this guy was really nice, but he basically said, no, I mean, it has nothing to do with that. I just come in and take the class and then I leave. And that's the value I get out of this. We're like, cool, fair enough. Sounds good. Thanks for hanging out. And then, you know, promptly walked away, opened the door, and then went and talked to every single person in the class and they all knew him and they were all very friendly with him. Actually, as people were walking by, as we were interviewing, they were like, what's up, Frank? How's it going? And we're like, oh, it has nothing to do with it, huh? So really, those observing activities are huge because the customers are going to say one thing and they're going to do another. And so we really like to make sure we're mixing those activities in our research approach.
Awesome. So Paul, maybe you can talk to us a little bit more about the importance and the value that organizations get coming out, you know, being able to build this type of capability internally.
Yeah, you know, I think I mentioned before that, you know, having a capability to do customer research and understanding your customers very deeply is a is really, I think, a competitive advantage. I think there's a few things that play into that. One is, you know, when you actually understand your customers deeply, you can actually develop things that they care about. You can deliver more value. You know, those companies who don't understand their customers don't ever talk to their customers. Mm-hmm. I think just miss the boat, miss opportunities and so forth. I think having something like a voice of the customer program and constantly be pulsing customers around what they're thinking can be an early warning system. Mm-hmm. If something is going wrong, you always have software upgrades, you change policies, you change processes. Your voice of the customer program can be an early warning system to identify upticks in problems and cut them off before they become, you know, widespread. And finally, any company that's involved with innovation, having the ability to quickly research, prototype something, put it in front of customers, fail faster, improve quicker, mm-hmm. Succeed faster, is going to have a competitive advantage in producing better products, failing quicker, and not wasting money on things that don't make sense. Any company that's into agile, you know, more business agility, mm-hmm. Foundation of it is I've got the ability, you know, in a couple of days can put product managers or process managers in front of customers to actually test a prototype, to ask them questions and get feedback. Most companies don't have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
It's a competitive advantage, and I think it's going to be more so in a very fast-paced, changing world.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for the topic. We'll get more into the different ways in which we can actually execute this research, a couple of different tools that we typically use, and we'll get into that in later episodes. But just to wrap up, we wanted to bring back our CX Tool of the Week segment. Unfortunately, we don't have a sponsor to bring it, you know, by. But really, you know, we were talking about in the theme of research, Pat, you alluded to, and Paul, talking about observations. We don't necessarily see observations being done a lot, but, I think it'd be great if we can talk about, you know, what is an observation, what's the value we get, and a couple of best practices that you've seen. So maybe, Paul, I'll kick it off to you.
Yeah, so, look, one of the common tools and a very simplistic tool for doing customer research is an interview. That's great. I get on the phone. Maybe I'm in person. The next step up from that is, hey, look, in a phone environment, I'm in a sort of a false environment. I can get some information, but why mm-hmm. not go into a person's home, into their workplace, and actually observe them doing the work and interview them perhaps or ask questions as I'm observing.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of variations on that theme, but the whole idea is getting out of your office, getting out of your chair, getting into the environment where a customer is living, understanding a customer's context in a broader sense than just using your product, because their life, quite frankly, doesn't revolve around you. It revolves around something much larger. And getting that perspective, again, identifies what a customer's trying to do, what the mm-hmm. problems, how they're MacGyvering your solution in ways that you may not know or see. That could be, again, within a physical product or a physical environment. I mean, mm-hmm. you can do observations in a digital environment, too. There's really great tools out there to watch a customer and have them narrate and, their experience trying to get from A to B, you know, in an online environment.
Yeah.
So lots of ways of doing that, but we like to just get out and watch customers.
Yeah. So, Pat, do you have any, like, best practices or things that you've seen work really well?
But real quick before we talk about that,
yeah.
I think the key to understanding why observations are important is to understand that it's really just about reducing assumptions. So, Paul, you had talked about earlier just getting out of the office. getting out of the office means you're not in your own bubble or your own echo chamber, as you, if you may. But the idea is to get with the customer in their environment and say, okay, so I have, we were talking about hypothesis earlier. I have these set of hypotheses about this customer. Let's see if they hold true. Many times, yes, understanding of the customer will hold true, but there'll be a few key things that you'll be surprised that you find that could massively affect how you approach that customer in the market. So really, if you want to understand the value of observations, it's about reducing assumptions. And that's, I think, a key takeaway there. As far as best practices, I think when we've done observations within our own group, it's one, the logistics of making those things work it's going to be more work than you think. So just make sure that you've got someone dedicated to make those observations happen, because you'll be surprised at how much coordination is required for something like that. So that's just something I always want to put out there. And then the idea of just staying silent, especially if you're a consultant out there, you like to talk and you maybe like to spit out a lot of jargon, and just making sure that you are keeping quiet, and you've got a series of directed hypotheses that you're looking to either validate or invalidate. I think, one thing I like to say is if you go in general, you're going to come out general, and that's probably for everything, but especially for observations. We had a B2B manufacturing and distribution client that we were doing observations for, and we spent a lot of time in figuring out what it is we were looking for specifically before we went in on the floor to kind of ask questions. And if we hadn't done that, you'd just be watching floor operations, and you'd be like, well, it was a warehouse, and that's great, but if you don't go in specific, you're not going to come out specific. I think that's a key thing to remember about observations as well.
Awesome. All right,
just one last comment on there is that don't let the complexity of the logistics get in the way of getting out. Sometimes just getting out and practicing and exercising that muscle is really, really important. So I just want to say there's guerrilla ways of doing this as well that are cheap and cheerful and quick with your customers.
Yeah, great point.
Fair enough, yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I appreciate the time today. Paul, as always, Pat, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you guys later. For next week, Paul, you and I are going to be talking about personas, so as a tool to use to facilitate research and understand customers better. So I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Fantastic. Have a great weekend.
Awesome. Paul. Take care, everyone, and have a great weekend.
Bye.